Good morning. There are moments when something meaningful ends and nobody quite knows how to leave. Conversations at funerals fall into this category. You've seen people in an awkward situation that you haven't seen in a long time. You don't know all that well. You talk to at funerals. And so you catch up, but after you talk about the usuals, how do you end that conversation? At best case scenario, you find somebody else and say, oh, I need to go talk to so-and-so, and you just kind of replace them with another awkward conversation, or pick an ending. The Gospel of John doesn't really have one ending, it has five, because John just didn't know how to wrap it up. Which is no different than a Peter Jackson movie. If you've watched The Lord of the Rings, my dad hates The Lord of the Rings movies, I think. He's never said it outright, but I'm pretty sure. We saw The Fellowship of the Rings in theater, and that movie has like seven endings if you've ever seen it. And my dad kept trying to get out of his seat every time the screen went black for a second, and then it'd come back on and he'd sit back down. Until finally, when the movie actually ended, he didn't get up. He just sat there out of protest because he'd already tried to leave five times. But, there are just moments where the endings don't feel right. Families stand around doorways at a holiday gathering because they don't really want to leave yet, but they need to. Or sometimes parents drop their kids off at the first day of school or the first day of college, and they just sit in the car afterwards and they don't know really what to do next. I mean, they know it's on the calendar, but leaving just doesn't sit right. I have a friend of mine who, this last year, in the same week, his father died and his oldest son went off to college. And in those two events, he just didn't know where he was anymore. The two most important men in his life were gone all of a sudden. I mean, his son was not, you know, dead, but he's gone off to college. It's more or less the same thing, really, because he hasn't heard from him in 3 months. And all of a sudden, he's got a parent that's actually physically gone forever and a child that's physically removed, and he was just kind of left unresolved. Life is full of these endings that just we kind of resist because we don't know how to make it any better, but we don't think it's right. Most of us, I think, know what that feels like and some version of that scale. When something matters deeply to us, there's this natural instinct to stay near it just a little longer, just to linger, not refusing reality, but because we just understand that something important has changed. We linger because love lingers. We stay because presence matters. And there's just something good in that instinct. Gratitude, I think, often looks like hesitation. I've done a lot of funerals in this line of work. I got so good at funerals in Texas, I had a wait list before people were dying. They'd book me in advance. I don't know how to feel about that, but I was getting booked in advance. And the thing that always moves me the most at a funeral from this side of the pulpit is that hesitation where you can feel a lifetime of love and gratitude. It's just beautiful. When a season has shaped us that dramatically, when a relationship has carried weight, when a moment feels holy or important, we do not rush away from it quickly. We rush everything else in our life. We're really good at rushing through everything. But when something like that ends, we slow down. Because if this moment mattered, then maybe we should stay here just a while. Maybe moving forward too quickly feels like losing something essential. Ascension begins in exactly that kind of moment. The word of the Lord from Luke chapter 24, verses 44 through 53. Then he said to them, "These are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, the Psalms, it must all be fulfilled." He opened their minds to understand the scriptures. He said to them, "Thus it is written that the Messiah is to suffer and to rise from the dead on the third day, and that repentance and forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed in his name to all nations, beginning from Jerusalem. And you guys are the witnesses of these things. So look it, I'm sending upon you what my Father promised. So stay here in the city until you have been clothed with power from on high." And he led them out as far as Bethany. And lifting up his hands, he blessed them. One last time, he picks up his hands and he wishes the best upon his friends. He blesses them one last time. And while he was blessing them, while he was still blessing them, he withdrew and was carried up into heaven. And they worshiped him. We need to pause. I know there's not a period there. There really should be. That's a full sentence. There's time packed into that moment. They sat there. They lingered. They worshiped him. They told stories. They remembered. They worshiped. They returned to Jerusalem with great joy. And they were continually in the temple blessing God. Jesus blesses the disciples. He blesses his friends. And then he is taken from their sight.
Mommy.
Luke tells the story
Mommy.
Gently. But there is something deeply unsettling about it once you slow Mommy. Down enough to sit in this moment.
Where's that small fan that used to be in the kids'
After
room?
After everything they've experienced, they lost him once. They got him back. There was confusion. There was joy. And now they're doing it again.
Left-hand corner by the Christmas stuff.
Everything's changing again. Once again, the form of his presence with them is slipping away just beyond their reach. The disciples stand there, staring into the sky, frozen in this moment, lingering, still looking upward long after he's gone from their sight. Like, I imagine it's a bit like watching a balloon float away, right? They're all sitting there watching it go up until one of them says, "I can't see him anymore. Do you still got it?" And then somebody else says, "Yeah, he's right there. I don't see it. There's that dot right by that cloud. I don't see it." Until eventually, none of them see it anymore, but they just keep staring at that spot, hoping that they can still, like, maybe see him getting bigger and coming back down. Afraid to turn your eyes away, because if you stop looking, you stop seeing. When something meaningful feels like it's ending, we linger. We keep looking back, or in this case, looking up. We try to hold on to that moment before it disappears completely. Because once we stop looking and we go back to whatever's next, it's really gone. And spiritually, we do the same thing in different forms, right? We hold on to seasons of our life where faith felt easier, more certain. We return in our minds to moments when God seemed easier to recognize, easier to feel, when the church felt more alive to us, when hope comes more naturally. We replay old experiences because part of us assumes that if God was truly present there, in that moment, in that place, then if I can stay tethered to that moment, that's the safest way to stay close. But this ascension business quietly disrupts that entire instinct. Jesus does not invite the disciples to preserve that moment. He does not tell them to remain on that mountain, staring at the sky, trying to hold on to where he was. Something new is happening. And if they stay fixed on what is behind them, they're going to miss out on what he's leading them to next. ascension is not ultimately about Jesus leaving the world behind. It is about Jesus claiming the world, the whole thing, as his own. The language throughout these readings pushes us toward that reality, right? Psalm 47 speaks of God ascending in triumph. Ephesians speaks of Christ being seated above every ruler and authority and power. This is not the story of absence. The ascension story is a story of culmination, of reign. The risen Christ is not found in holding on to where he was, but in joining what he is now doing. Christians don't have a Dome of the Rock. We didn't preserve that spot. We've preserved just about everything else. You can find a brochure for a tour guide to take you just about anywhere else. But finding this spot is not like finding the Dome of the Rock. We didn't preserve that spot. We don't stay tethered to it. Because if we stay tethered to that rock he stepped off of, then we're still tethered to him leaving. And we missed everything else that came next. That changes the meaning of this whole moment completely. The disciples have lost their visibility. They've lost the visible form of presence that they know and love. But they are not losing Christ himself. His work is not ending. It is expanding. The one who walked with them on dusty roads in Galilee is now the Lord over all creation, who is about to walk with them on roads as far as Rome and Ethiopia and India and into Europe. They don't hold on to that spot because they have all the rest of the world to go with him. He didn't leave. He just went everywhere else. And I know that doesn't, in our heads, that doesn't physically make sense, but in your hearts, doesn't it? This is why the disciples can return to Jerusalem with joy. Not because nothing has changed, but because they finally understand that this is not the closing of a story. This is the widening of a story. Jesus is no longer confined to just being one place, one road, with one group of people standing on one hillside in one spot. He is now everywhere, all at once. Ascension is not about Jesus going away. It is about Jesus becoming Lord of everywhere. If ascension was just a story about him going somewhere else, then this is just another goodbye. But because ascension is about him going everywhere all at once, the question that follows is no longer how do we stay here? It's where are we going to find him next? Where is he leading us now? Where will he pop up next? We still spend a great deal of energy trying to preserve moments that we can't hold on to. We are really good at looking backward at seasons that feel alive with wonder, and we try to keep going back. We chase how we looked in the mirror 30 years ago. We chase how we were naive about how we looked at the world 40 years ago. We chase our past. We remember things that felt clearer, when life made more sense, when hope felt easier to hold on to. And sometimes we do this personally. Sometimes churches do it collectively. We tell stories about when things used to be, as though faithfulness means finding a way to remain in that one spot forever. As if we could just build a dome around that one moment in time and make that the thing that defines us. But memory itself is not the problem. And gratitude is not the problem. The disciples are not rebuked for loving him. They're not rebuked for lingering. The problem comes when nostalgia becomes a substitute for following. Because the disciples cannot stay on that mountain. They return to Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is not a safer place. It is not simpler. The world has not suddenly become easier to navigate, but they go back anyway. And they go back with joy because they finally understand something essential. That Christ is already there ahead of them. When they go back to Jerusalem, they go back knowing that he's waiting for them in the room where they left him. He's already there because now he is everywhere. There is nowhere they can go without him. They put him in a tomb once and locked him away, and he was away from them for 3 days. But now, because he has ascended, there's nowhere they can shove him to keep him away. He'll never be gone. That changes the shape of Christian faith. It makes Christian faith unique in all the world. If Jesus was just a guy who got crucified, he'd be one of thousands, tens of thousands. There's nothing special about that. If he was somebody who was resurrected, if we're being quite honest, there's a handful of people in that club too. Lazarus left an empty tomb behind too, but we don't worship Lazarus. This one ascended everywhere. Faith is not standing still trying to recreate yesterday's experience of God. Faith is joining the living Christ in what he is already doing in the here and now. That is the true power of his ascension. And where is he ascended to? Where is he reigning now? Everywhere. In the ordinary places. In reconciliation between brothers who don't always get along but need each other. In between people who would rather remain divided. In moments in which people come across, I don't know, an aisle to come together for a common good. In quiet moments of service that nobody will ever applaud or even notice. In communities that are trying to embody grace in a world shaped by fear and outrage. And people who choose hope, forgiveness, generosity, and love when those things are just so costly these days. Inflation has hit everything. Inflation has hit the cost of love, hasn't it? It gets harder to love. It gets harder to be grateful. The disciples stopped staring into the sky and they returned to Jerusalem, not because Christ has gone away, but because his reign over everything has already begun. And maybe that is the question Ascension puts before us. Not simply, where did he go? But where is he leading us next? Where to next? Where is Christ already at work in this world, inviting us to participate instead of merely observing? Where are we being called to move instead of remaining frozen in what used to be? Because the risen Christ is not trapped in the past. Even in a holy past, he reigns now. He leads now. He sends now. And the invitation of ascension is not to cling to the spot where he was once. It's to follow where he is reigning now and next. Jesus ascends while blessing his disciples. And that detail matters. The final posture of Christ before he is taken from their sight is not distance, it's blessing. It's not withdrawal, it's gift. And that blessing does not end at that mountain. It continues into the life that they are now being sent to live. While he is still blessing them, he withdraws. Did you notice the one thing that does not end in the story? There is not a single verse, line, or word that actually tells us that he ever stopped blessing them. It never stopped. That's why they go back to Jerusalem with joy. He never stopped blessing them. He never stopped blessing us. It continues into the life that we are all now being sent to live, and that is what we receive at this table. We do not come to this table trying to preserve a moment that has already passed. This table is not a memorial. We come to participate in something in this table, a blessing. And we step into a blessing that started before us and will last long after we're gone. We just enter into it moment by moment, week after week. We come to participate in the life of the risen and reigning Christ who still gathers his people, feeds them, and sends them into the world that he holds and blesses. Here at this table, we don't receive nostalgia. It's nourishment. We don't gather at a table to remember something that happened long ago. We step into something that's happening now. It's here where Christ is still blessing his people, where his kingdom is already breaking into this world, and it's here that we are sent to follow the one who reigns over all things and all people and all places. The ascension was never the story of Christ going away. It has always been the story of Christ going everywhere. So who are we to stare at the sky and wonder why he feels so distant? Do you know what happened to the last person who thought they felt distant from Jesus before he ascended? Do you remember? The last time somebody felt distant from Jesus might have been the road to Emmaus, when Cleopas and friend were wondering if he was gone forever, and Jesus just sat there with them at the table after walking 7 miles with them and says, "You think he's really gone, huh?" And the time before that, the last person before that who thought that Jesus was so far gone and distant was Mary, who looked at Jesus in the garden and said, "Have you seen where they put his body?" And he looks around and says, "Yeah, I know exactly where it is." Every time that somebody looks at the risen Christ and says, "He's just so far away," every single time they do it, the person they're telling that to is the risen Christ, who's just sitting there smiling with a smirk on his face, waiting for the rest of us to figure it out. His ascension does not mean he's gone. His ascension means he's standing right in front of you, just waiting for you to figure it out. It's what's so beautiful about the version of the story in Acts. In Acts, the disciples stand there, and they're staring at the sky, and then all of a sudden, there's two other people there with them who weren't there before, who are angels staring at the sky with them, and they say, "What are you looking at?" And they say, he's right up there. He's just, do you see the dot?" And they say, "He's not there. He's waiting for you in Jerusalem and beyond." If you are still staring at a sky waiting to see Jesus and thinking he's so far away, you might need to turn around and look, because odds are he's just waiting for you to figure out he's actually right behind you. And he's got your back. He's been behind you the whole way. The moment in which people think God is farthest away is always the moment that God is the closest. So if you come to this table today feeling like God is farther away than ever before, I need you to know, if not believe, at least to know, that that means he's actually closer than ever. You just got to see it. So he stands there blessing them with things like, if you have the eyes to see, see. If you have the ears to hear, hear. I'm right there. Just look. Just listen. Come to this table with eyes to see and ears to hear, and let him continue blessing us in everything that we do. Let's stand.